Hi, this is Matt with EDUCAUSE, and joining me now is Joan Lippincott, Associate Executive Director for CNI, the Coalition for Networked Information. Joan, tell me about CNI and some of the activities that you're pursuing.
Well, CNI was founded in 1990 as a joint program of EDUCAUSE and the Association of Research Libraries, and it continues today under both organizations' sponsorship. We have about 200 member institutions, a lot from higher education, but also a very interesting mix of publishers, scholarly societies, large public and national libraries, and networking companies. So it's a really interesting mix. We have a wide range of issues that we address, all related to networked information, grouped into three main areas that I describe in a shorthand way as content, people, and technology. Some of the specific activities that we're engaged in, there's really a wide range, but I'll just mention two. Institutional repositories has been a really big issue for us for the past several years. And in regards to that topic, we did a survey of our members to get an idea of whether they're actually implementing institutional repositories or plan to. And we deal with some of the real leading edge universities and have a really good profile of what's happening out there. We published that in an article in the DLib magazine, along with a companion piece that looks at the international scene as a result of joint conference we did with JISC, our UK organization, and CERF, a Dutch networking organization. We do sessions on institutional repositories at our meetings. We did one at the last EDUCAUSE conference, and so that's one of the areas. An area that I work very closely in is about learning spaces, all types of physical spaces that use technology and teaching and learning. We've done pre-conferences here at EDUCAUSE and other meetings. We've written articles and done talks. And also, very importantly, we partner with other groups, with ELI here at EDUCAUSE, and also with Knightley, which is a liberal arts college organization.
In the Educating the Net Generation ebook, you wrote a chapter about it, about libraries in it. In fact, you wrote, Net Generation students clearly perceive the open space of the World Wide Web as their information universe. This is in opposition to the worldview of librarians and many faculty who perceive the library as the locus of information relevant to academic work. Can you elaborate a little bit for our listeners on the implications of that kind of comment?
Well, I do have a professional background as a librarian, and so I understand that vantage point. I've worked in universities for many years prior to coming to CNI, and I do understand the academic focus and nature of scholarly communication. However, I think sometimes there's a misperception that there is not a great deal of scholarly information available, freely available on the internet. And there is, particularly coming from government agencies and nonprofit associations and lots of other cultural institutions and lots of other sources. And I believe that many library research and development activities, either by libraries or vendors in the library field, they focus on, for example, making search of licensed materials better and more inclusive, going across licensed resources products. But those mechanisms usually ignore the freely available quality resources on the web. So I'd like to see more attention on developing a more inclusive search mechanisms or other ways of representing quality materials on library websites. For example, for a recent article I was writing, I examined a lot of university library websites looking for how they represent freely available quality web content. And I focused, for example, on could I find a reference to the NSDL, or the National Science Digital Library, funded by NSF, that includes a really high quality science sources. by and large, it's absent from library websites. So are there ways that libraries can represent that kind of content, even something as simple as a resource of the week on a library homepage, which, of course, some libraries do, but there could be more ways of representing these non-licensed resources through the library.
Indeed. It also sort of makes me think about the relationship of something like institutional repositories to or maybe as compared to something like the Internet Archives. Sort of you've got the sort of silo in one approach versus the more broad sort of sphere of information that's available throughout the web and primary sources for destination sites for where you find information. Do you have any thoughts on that front?
Well, I think it makes for a really bewildering universe of information for students and other people seeking information. It's really hard to figure out where to go to find the quality stuff that works for your topic. And I do think that, therefore, most students take the simple and direct route of using Google. And I'm not against that. I just think we need better ways of leading students to good sources for the particular need that they have.
Right. Well, let me run a few sites across you. Google Scholar, print and video, Amazon's Look Inside the Book functionality, Podscope, MetaBrains, LibraryThing.com, AllConsuming.net, the Internet Archive, which I mentioned before, and the Open Content Alliance. What images do these sites conjure up?
Well, I think these are all initiatives on a really grand scale for including more digital content on the network, and that's a really, really significant thing. These companies like Google and Yahoo have been able to ratchet up and expanded the scale of digital content, or at least they have a vision for expanding the scale to a degree that libraries have only dreamed of up to now. So I'd like to make two points in contrasting some of these projects, not all of the ones that you mentioned, but in particular, Google Print. And there are five libraries involved in this, three universities in New York Public and Oxford, or three U.S. universities. And by the way, CNI was the first meeting to have all five on a panel last spring. We were really pleased to bring them together. And this is a really interesting initiative to digitize resources in the five libraries. In a couple of cases, very broad efforts to digitize, and in some of the institutions, there are very limited access to what they're going to make available. I think that this project is going to have a very interesting impact on the general public, and one that maybe enough people aren't aware of, and that is that since Google plans to digitize many materials that are still under the protection of copyright, users won't be able to automatically access the full text of everything that they find through searching Google Print. And the impact of that is that I think it will increase the awareness of what intellectual property means. And I think it's really significant, particularly for students, to begin to understand that they live in an information society where they'll not only want to use information, but they'll produce information. And they need to understand what putting limits on access to content means. It can mean financial success. It can mean that fewer people see your product. It can mean, in terms of putting on an open access license, that everyone globally can see your work.
Right.
But I just think we need to have a more of a national and, in fact, international discussion of some of the intellectual property issues. And I think Google Print is going to help facilitate a broader awareness of that issue.
Wow, interesting.
Now, in contrast, the Open Content Initiative, which is involving the Internet Archive, as you mentioned, Yahoo, Adobe, I believe, California Digital Library, University of Toronto, and some other partners, is only going to look at a material that is not under copyright. Either it's out of copyright or has an open access license. And, or, for example, is U.S. government-produced information, which is not under copyright. So this will be in contrast to Google Print. And I think the benefit is that the Open Content Project is planning to include things that are not necessarily book publications.
Right.
It'll have websites and teaching and learning materials. And so I am very excited that this just expands even more, this whole universe of content that will be available on the web. It'll benefit the public at large.
Yeah, do you worry at all, especially, I know we're supposed to be focused more on the primarily on the academic sector, but I guess to some degree it applies to universities more broadly. And do you worry at all about the disruption of the public good or the public awareness of the public good that libraries serve as more of these activities build momentum? Is there any concern on that front at all?
Well, I think that by and large with libraries, there is a concern that taxpayers, university administrators, and others feel that now that we have the web and we have Google, why do you need physical libraries with print books? And I'd say that there are lots of answers to that question, one being that in terms of traditional print materials such as novels or fiction and some types of books, many people still are not interested in reading those resources on a screen. They mostly want books. And so I personally believe, and I think many people believe, there's still a place for books. It's just that there's a whole broader information universe in addition to books. Then there's the physical aspects of a library that is increasingly becoming a community space and a social space. Mm-hmm. I talked recently with the director of libraries at University of Miami, and they've renovated their library. And he says it has become the living room of the campus. Mm. I really like that image. And it's just packed every night with students who find it a comfortable place to study, to meet their friends, and to work on their academic work while they socialize or alternately socialize and do their academic work.
Absolutely.
So I think that the physical library and the digital and virtual libraries will continue to exist, but I think that librarians and other leaders will need to become more skilled at making the case for the funding of traditional libraries.
And perhaps more nuanced about the role of the physical space, as you mentioned. But perhaps it's not just about sort of lending books and providing research materials and reference services. It is about providing that venue for collaborating physically in some regards, and perhaps even a space for the really great connection, the awesome conferencing facilities for virtual collaboration, perhaps. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts there?
Yes. Before I go on to learning spaces, though, I had wanted to make one additional point, and that is the library's role in representing the traditional democratic ideal of a marketplace of ideas. And I think that that's something that libraries have continued to provide this stewardship of a space where you can have access to all kinds of views on a wide range of topics. And I think that it's essential that we safeguard that role of libraries and not just come to totally commercial access to information through publishers. And I think that libraries continue to play a really strong role. They're both public libraries and academic libraries.
And society needs to be really, really aware of that.
Right.
I mean, sometimes it's interesting to sort of look at a Google or Amazon and have that direct relationship with them on a daily basis and not realize that these are commercial companies. Certainly libraries have been sort of a safe haven in many regards for privacy and protection of the consumer in that regard.
Right. Shall I turn to learning space design? I've been working a lot on that in the past couple of years. My interest was spurred at a library IT constituency group meeting here at EDUCAUSE probably about 4 years ago when some IT people were saying that they wanted to have more presence in the library, for example, put a computer lab in the library, but the librarians, they were in a turf war with the librarians about access to space. And several people people agreed with the person who got up to talk about this. And I thought, you know, this really ties in so directly to CNI's theme of collaboration between the library and IT, because really to make this work, it's not about putting a computer lab in a library. It's about figuring out how to make technology available to enrich access to information in a library. So a new way of looking at computing in libraries. And the realization of that has been the development of information commons or learning commons in libraries. As they renovate their spaces, these information or learning commons combine the access to the technology, but a strong tie-in to content, both the digital content and the print content that's available in the physical library, but in addition, services that are available both in-person and virtual to assist users in accessing and developing information. Now, one of my real issues in development of information commons is that some of these facilities are still developed with a focus just on access to information, the really traditional strong suit of libraries. I believe that's not enough for today's NetGen students. Today's students create new information products in the digital medium, whether it's PowerPoints or multimedia presentations, videos, embedding images into their papers, all kinds of things that bring together the rich content that the library can help them have access to, but they need to do this in the context of their academic work. So I feel that the services that Information Commons need to offer, in addition to, say, traditional reference service, are helping students create digital information projects. So Information Commons are really complex projects because they can incorporate a lot of types of spaces, spaces for individuals to work, for groups to work, classroom spaces, service desks, staff space. And they really need to address some of the trends for offering more informal and comfortable spaces for students to work. A multimedia production, as I've mentioned. Another new emphasis are practice presentation rooms. These are facilities where students, like, say, a business student can present a marketing presentation, invite a few of his or her friends to come and watch, and practice doing their PowerPoint before they actually have to do it in class. Georgia Tech takes this a step further by offering videotaping, and then the student can access the video on the server and critique themselves after they've done their practice presentation. So I really like that combination of the physical and virtual services. And then if we take it even a step farther, very few organizations or institutions are doing this yet, but we'll probably see an increasing number of visualization facilities built into libraries. The purpose of putting it into libraries, and this is a point made by a guy named Bernie Frischer, who's now at University of Virginia, is that it's a shared space, so it isn't owned by a particular department or school or institute, and everyone could have access to it. And so I think that's going to be an emerging interest in these kinds of spaces.
Really cool. Have you talked at all with the George Lucas Foundation about any of this? I know he's primarily focused on K through 12, but I would think that that organization would also find it really, really fascinating.
I haven't talked with him, but I'll explore that possibility. I do read their materials and get some ideas from some of the things they're doing with K through 12. One of the things, for example, is having students involved in designing their own classroom space. They had an article on that in the past year, and it's something that I really promote to institutions designing learning spaces to make sure they're including students on their actual teams of working with architects and having focus groups of students to really understand what students want and what they would find useful.
Well, I ran a few sites across you earlier, and let me run a few terms across you now. Folksonomies, tagging, microformats, blogs, wikis, the long tail, mashing, remixing, the read-write web, glocalization. Did any of those pique your interest, and why?
Well, I'm going to It's funny to call this a more traditional one, but I'm going to focus on blogs. Some of the ones that you've mentioned I haven't even explored yet, so you will pique my interest, and I'll try maybe a few more than I have up to this point. But the University of Minnesota Library sponsors blogging for its community, and they have dozens of blogs that students host, and they provide the site. And one of the things I like about them, the University of Minnesota concept, is they also have physical events, like they brought in a noted blogger to do a talk. And I think that they have the right idea in terms of the context. They promote it as a way of getting lots of ideas out to the academic community, and it also promotes this sense of community, and that's a role that a library can play on a campus. So I think they've been really astute in the way they've positioned themselves. Now, my own idea for libraries to work in the blog sphere is to start some projects that would really focus on dissertation writers, thesis and dissertation writers, a really neglected community. And having been someone who got a PhD at a later than usual age, it was one of the times when you feel most isolated in your academic experience, and a time that I actually sought out a community of fellow students to help work through the issues that I was facing. I'd like to see some libraries develop programs that would host blogs of dissertation writers or other ways of developing online community and physical community, maybe devoting one of their group discussion rooms in the library for dissertation writers, putting in some electronic thesis and dissertation software that was developed as a pilot between Adobe and Ohio State, putting that in the room, putting some sample electronic theses and dissertations, making them clearly available on a website that's accessible in a group discussion room, having an informal place where doctoral students can meet and discuss their issues of moving forward on completing their dissertation.
So, and would that be local to the university or more national or international? How would you envision that working?
Well, that's a very good point. I had thought of it as a local idea, but it could very easily be national and international in terms of topical communities, so that at your own university, there's generally no one working in quite as narrow an area as you are, whereas you could find that community nationally or internationally. On the other hand, I found that just working with students in my same program, even though we had quite different topics, helped because they understood the politics of my department and the faculty member personalities and that kind of thing that is very helpful when you're at the dissertation phase. So I see the value to both. I think both could be really useful.
Cool. Well, let's close with a question about the future of the library profession. Where do you see it going?
Well, focusing particularly on libraries in universities and colleges and the academic environment, I'd like to see librarians reorient themselves from what I'd call a library-centric view. I think most librarians believe they work for the library in their university or college. I would like to see them think that they work in a university information environment, that they're really the ones who help organize, structure, and provide services for an information infrastructure for their university. So what does that mean? It means that librarians would address all aspects of digital information and print information, from the freely available web sources to digital library resources to physical library resources, that they'd work really closely with the curriculum, both in terms of being active presence in course management systems for their institutions, which some are already doing, but it's not as widespread as it should be, and in having active information or technology literacy programs that provide really meaningful introduction of issues to students who will live and work in an information society. Mm-hmm. And in the research environment, one of CNI's latest initiatives is looking at the management and stewardship of research data. And I'd like to see librarians increasingly play a role in this attention to research data. Some leading institutions are working towards this. We're going to have a number of sessions at our fall CNI meeting that address this topic. And in addition to research data, I'd like to see librarians assisting faculty with the whole range of licensing issues, dealing with from open content to licensing for commercial publications. Again, some libraries have intellectual property experts, some who are attorneys on mm-hmm. their library staff. This isn't a widespread thing, and right. I think that it's not just increasingly important, I think it's been important for years, and right. I think we need to address this in a more systematic way across colleges and universities.
Mm. One quick follow-up on that. I can remember some of my earlier experiences with librarians being those that would really assist me in helping me find information. Do you think that going forward in a world where media literacy is increasingly becoming recognized as some competencies that we need to develop, do you think that there will be a role in the future that involves more direct involvement on the creation of content? How do you create a video, or how do you do nonlinear editing, things like that? Do you think there's any potential for that kind of development?
Yes, I do see that very much, and I'd like to see that as a feature of services offered in information commons or
right.
learning commons. I feel that one of the ways that this could be realized is for librarians to work more closely with instructional technologists.
Ah, yeah.
And I think that there's a really great match there between the types of projects they each work on,
mm-hmm.
and yet I find in many universities they don't have much interaction or content
mm-hmm.
or contact. I'd like to see more interaction and more joint projects
mm-hmm.
between librarians and instructional technologists,
mm-hmm.
both in developing curricular projects with faculty, but as you say, to work more about addressing the interests and needs for students to develop new types of multimedia works.
Yeah, I mean, I think that as you begin archiving digital copies of videos and,
mm-hmm.
and music and make that available and try to incorporate those back into projects, and it's just a fascinating sort of future there, I think. And I really appreciate those thoughts. Well, Joan, thanks very much for taking the time to speak with us. Do you have any closing thoughts?
I invite everyone to visit the CNI website at www.cni.org. We have a lot of presentations from our meetings on the website, links to articles and presentations that Cliff Lynch, our executive director, and myself have written. And it's really a rich resource of information on lots of topics in the broad arena of networked information.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed this opportunity
cool.
to talk with you today, and thank you.
Thank you. Enjoy the conference. This podcast is made possible by Apple Computer Incorporated and Educause Gold Partner. If you're listening to this recording on a remote device, you can comment on this podcast and read entries from our ever-growing community of bloggers at connect.educause.edu. Educause is a nonprofit association whose mission is to advance higher education by promoting the intelligent use of information technology. Engage, learn, network, and grow at Educause.